Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed! They've got into each other!
I wasn't listening. No idea what you were speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds off the back of another Grand Prix weekend, the third of three races in a row. Monza, of course, Italy, always got a lot of motor racing passion in Italy. They've got the Ferraris from Italy, of course, Alfa Romeos from Italy. So lots of motorsport heritage, some amazing history and an amazing track as well. And it is one of the fastest, if not the fastest Grand Prix of the entire year. So a mega race. And of course, we had this sprint qualifying this weekend again as well.
Yeah, I think the sprint qualifying is a really good addition to F1. I'm not sure I'd like it every single race weekend, but if they do it three times a year like they are this year, I think it's quite entertaining. We had it at Silverstone, of course. And if you look at the sprint race itself, almost a carbon copy of the Silverstone event, wasn't it? Because, you know, Max did really well in the sprint. We knew that Bottas was going to have to start from the back of the grid in Sunday's race because of an engine change. Bottas ultimately winning the sprint race. And it's weird as well. You know, we talk about Bottas lots during the season, saying that his racecraft's not fantastic. But he is very good over a single lap with a fresh set of tyres. And he proved that by starting first on the grid for the sprint race, which I thought was good. But then during Sunday's race, Bottas again wasn't able to really keep up or overtake once his tyres started to wear down. We'll come to the main race in just a bit, but what did you think of the sprint?
Yeah, again, I mean, Bottas is interesting. I thought he had a great weekend, which A, was needed for him, but B, it felt like the whole announcement of him going to Alfa Romeo was like a huge weight off his shoulders. And it just felt like he was very much like Vettel when Vettel kind of announced he was leaving Ferrari. And it was almost like you can visibly see the weight coming off their shoulders and the whole, oh, okay, I've got this new project and, you know, fresh start, fresh teammates, fresh everything. And I just felt like he was a very different driver this weekend, Bottas, in terms of he just looked very relaxed and seemed to enjoy himself. Sprint race, I'm a bit undecided. I personally think something like a reverse grid would be a better idea in terms of more overtaking and that kind of stuff. It is a good addition. I don't think it's a bad thing, the sprint race, but I was kind of watching it on Saturday thinking, oh, it's a bit like, it's just, I don't know, it's just like a little mini race. And it felt a bit, I think they've got to get the right tracks to do it at. I think if you do it at certain tracks where there's loads of overtaking opportunities, for example, if you did a sprint race at Monaco, it'd be a waste of time because you can't overtake and it's just pointless having it somewhere like that. I think if they pick the right courses, the right tracks to have it at, and they pick, you know, certain things that go along with it, it would make a nice addition. But I also think the, you know, the reverse grid, which is something they've done for years in the British Touring Car Championships, where they get, I think it's the top 10, isn't it? And they get someone to pick a ball basically somewhere in the top 10. So say they pick number 7, the car that's in 7th then starts on pole and they swap the order completely around, which works really well, I think, in British touring cars. And I think something like that would work quite well in Formula One. Because one thing you do sort of notice is the fast cars do come through, don't they? And the faster cars can overtake easier than say, the slower cars, obviously. And it just sort of spices things up a little bit. You know, for years we've had these conversations, haven't we? Oh, should we have sprinklers because the rain spices things up? Should we do this? Should we do that? There's always been these different ideas. And for me, it's all right, the sprint race. I'm not against it, but I do feel like it needs a little bit of a tweak here and there, maybe.
Yeah, it was a bit of a damn squib, wasn't it, really? The opening lap when Pierre Gasly crashed out and Robert Kubica spun his Alfa Romeo, that was pretty much the only action that we saw. I mean, I guess they're sampling sprint racing this year because next year they might make some tweaks. And, of course, next year's cars are intended to be able to follow and overtake more easily. So sprint qualifying could come into its own next year. But at Monza, like you say, it's a track where traditionally we don't see that much overtaking. Into Turn 1 is the traditional place where we do see the overtaking. But to be honest, we saw it at the Les Mos corners this year as well. So I think the cars are getting closer to each other. Certainly, as we get towards the end of the season, the teams that have been developing their cars are making net gains, and the teams that haven't, like Haas, are sort of drolling round at the back of the grid, as we've seen all season. But yeah, the sprint on the right track, like you say, I think is probably a good concept. Whether it's a good concept at Monza or not, I'm undecided at the moment.
And my concern is with the whole of it. When you speak to someone who's not a big Formula One fan, And you have a conversation with them, and they'll always say the same thing. Oh, what's the point? There's no point in watching it. Hamilton always wins. And you go, well, that's not true this year, for example. But it's I feel like it's really complex to then explain. There's a sprint race, but only some races have it, and this is how it works. And you qualify the day before, and then the sprint race determines the race. And they're kind of looking at you like, what? What are you going on about? And I know it's not designed for the casual fan. It's designed for the proper fans. But I just feel like there's probably an easier way of spicing things up without making it so complex for the casual fan as well. Because at the end of the day, it is entertainment. You've got to make it good for, you know, hardcore fans and casual fans. You can't make it too easy to work out, because then the hardcore fans won't enjoy it as much. But at the same time, you can't make it too complex for a new casual fan coming in to understand what's going on. That's why, like, the reverse grid, it's just a very obvious idea. What happens? You reverse, you know, the numbers of the cars and they go the other way around. Oh, okay, that makes sense. So I'm not against the idea, but yeah, like I say, I think it needs a few tweaks. But overall, I thought it was a very good race. Now, you know, the last couple of years, because Monza can be a bit, you know, it's a very fast racetrack, but it can be a bit samey. And, you know, the last couple of years, obviously we had Gasly win the race last year, and then we had a surprise win again this year. But it's just, you know, it's been an amazing racetrack for the last couple of years, and so, so good to see McLaren firstly get up there. You know, the 1-2, it's been years since they've had a 1-2. I think did they say it's been 9 years since they had a win even, which is incredible when you think a team like McLaren have not had a win for 9 years. But that's firstly great to see them do so well, but to see Ricciardo back up there as well. He's come back from the summer break a completely different driver, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he spent most of the season saying he can't get to grips with the car, and all of a sudden he really has got to grips with the car, which is fantastic to see. The only team this year to have a 1-2, which is amazing in itself, isn't it, that stat? Because we're so used to seeing Mercedes, you know, Hamilton and Bottas, 1 and 2 on the podium, but it's never happened for any team this year until Monza, when McLaren cracked it.
Yeah, and just, you know, again, Lando, just brilliant. I thought they just got it exactly right, didn't they? It was a superb start from Ricciardo. And of course, Verstappen's going to be a little bit edgy and a little bit careful, because, you know, he's in it for the championship, and he's going to be very aware that he can't lose that race. He can't crash out on the first lap. So he's been a bit cautious. Ricciardo had an amazing start. Lando has just driven the socks off that car. He's been amazing in that car all year. I think Ricciardo's now finally caught up with Lando, and they're both driving the car really well. But, I mean, what a future for McLaren. They're looking now going, okay, we're the only team to have a 1-2 this year. Got the Mercedes engine in the car now. There's the rule change next year. They've got a great management team in place. Drivers are superb. You know, Ricciardo's upped his game, and he's up there now with Lando. Lando's been brilliant all year. What a future ahead, potentially, for McLaren.
Yeah, without doubt. I think it would be nice to see them continue to get stronger as this current season develops, but also next year, you know, with the new rule changes, it will be lovely to see them come out of the blocks really fighting for wins and podiums at every single racetrack. I think that would be great. So, of course, we have to talk about the crash and the incident between Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. I thought Max was on the back foot for the entire weekend. He was fairly slow in Friday practice, and then Friday qualifying for the sprint race, I thought he was going to struggle to get up there, but he managed to, helped a lot by his teammate Perez giving him the toe down the start-finish straight, which sacrificed Perez's status, but that's what he's there for as a rear gunner, especially when his top driver in Max is going for the world championship. And then sprint race, of course, Max pulled it out of the bag and did very well. And we knew, of course, that Bottas would have been demoted to the back of the grid for Sunday's main race, which meant that Max started in pole position, which is great. And then we saw the brilliant start by Danny Ricciardo, and we saw Lando Norris make the good start too. Hamilton not making a good start, and this is becoming a bit of a habit on Sunday race days, isn't it? Hamilton, we're so used to seeing him make lightning starts, but a couple of times this season he struggled to get off the line.
Yeah, I think without a doubt, Verstappen has rattled Hamilton mentally this year. I think he's not had a teammate. You know, Bottas for the last sort of 5 years has not really been all over him. He might have won the odd race and stuff, but Hamilton's always been the clear number one in that team. And I don't think he's had much to worry about for the last 4 or 5 years. Now, all of a sudden, you've got this young kid, Verstappen, who's, you know, driving the wheels off the car every weekend. The car's good enough to be up there. And it feels to me like Hamilton's a little bit rattled. Now, next year, he's going to have to deal with that with Verstappen and the Red Bull. but he's also going to have to deal with George Russell in the other car as well. So, you know, is this going to be a real proper test next year for Hamilton, where the mental game, he's got two young, hungry upstarts that both want to be world champion, and he's going to have them pretty much either side of him each race, I imagine, if the cars turn out like they have done this year. But I feel like he's a little bit rattled. He's had some rubbish starts this year, like you say. He's done some very un-Hamilton things. But to me, it's just very Senna-Prost what we're seeing now. Yeah. You've got two drivers that both of them are refusing to give up. And I think Verstappen is the slightly cheekier driver, I'm going to put it that way, and Hamilton's the cleaner driver of the two, in my opinion. But what happened here, I think, is that Hamilton's gone, right, okay, if you're going to drive like that, if you're going to drive cheeky and you're going to take liberties, I'm going to take liberties as well, and I'm going to drive like you drive. So now you've got two drivers driving exactly the same. Neither one will give up. And the outcome of that is what we saw this weekend. It's crashes. We had one in Silverstone, obviously. We had one here. In your opinion, whose fault do you think that accident was this weekend, either of them?
You know, when I watched it, I thought Hamilton squeezed him out. But actually, I probably would agree with the stewards. And when they wrote their report, it was quite clear how they viewed it. And basically, you know, Hamilton didn't leave Max much room, but Hamilton was ahead of Max and therefore had the right to take that chicane the way he did. You know, if anything, Max should have backed off and waited for his chance to overtake further round the lap, even though Max was on hard tyres and Hamilton had just come out of the pits on a set of mediums, which are obviously the slightly faster tyre. I think Max thought, this is going to be my only chance to get past him, because if I let him go or back out, those medium tyres are going to give him an advantage. And by the time we finish this lap, he's going to be 2-3 seconds ahead of me. So I understand why he did it. Let's go back to what happened, though, because, again, really unusual. Max pits from the top five in the race, and he just sits in the pit box. I'm like, what is going on with Red Bull, who've got the record for the fastest pit stop of the season in under 2 seconds? And he was there for, what, 12 seconds he was stationary in the end, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was somewhere around there. And that was exactly it. Red Bull threw that away, didn't they? They put him in that position to come out next to Hamilton. It was bad luck where he fed back out. And I kind of agree with you in some senses. I kind of watched it back and I thought, like you say, obviously Verstappen's never going to give that place back. He's trying to get that because that was his last chance to get through. I don't think Hamilton gave him all the room in the world, but at the same time, it felt very much like a racer's incident to me. And it's a tough one to kind of, because if you keep punishing moves like that, we're never going to see any overtakes. We're never going to see any excitement. But at the same time, you know, you can't let that stuff go ahead as well. I mean, it turned out to be quite a dangerous accident, didn't it? When you see that picture of the wheel that's, you know, on top of the halo, and you see the size of the tire compared to Hamilton's helmet, and you think, oh, you know, you dread to think without that halo there, which, again, I mean, how many times since that halo's come in have we gone, thank God for the halo? Another incident, yeah.
Well, right, it saved Romain Grosjean's life last year, didn't it? And it saved Hamilton's life in what was actually a fairly low-speed collision, but it was just weird the way Verstappen's car got scooped up and that rear tyre definitely landed straight. You know, without the halo, that rear tyre and the entire weight of the back end of the Red Bull would have landed squarely on Lewis Hamilton's head, and that could have been a absolute disaster. So it's amazing that they've got these safety things in place. You know, if you look at IndyCar, they've got the aero screen, and I hate that because the reflections off the glass mean that you can't see the driver at all. The halo, we're all used to it now. I don't even notice when I'm watching Formula One races that the halo is there. I can see the driver's head and helmet clearly, and it doesn't spoil the enjoyment for me whatsoever. So the halo's been a fantastic invention. I noticed that the FIA are investigating just how unusual that crash was and what they can do to try and mitigate against that kind of thing in the future.
Yeah, sausage curbs didn't help, obviously, and I think they do need to look at them. And the other thing I'll say is I don't think Verstappen, sorry, helped himself when he made that radio call where he basically said, well, that's what you get for not giving anyone room. Because I think if you listen back to that radio call, it was like the spoilt child of, well, that's what happens when you don't play fair. And it's kind of, I if I was a judge and I was watching that video and I was a steward and I'm going, to me, that came across as a little bit kind of spoilt brat. And I'm a big Verstappen fan, but I just think that didn't help his cause, that radio message. You know, they're definitely going to come together again at some point in this season. That's not the end of it. I feel like it's getting spicier and spicier. I feel like Toto Wolff and Christian Horner have fallen out more than Hamilton and Verstappen. I feel like those two team bosses, you know, they have a jab at each other in every interview. Every interview, Toto's like, well, listen, I'm not in the game for accusing people, or I'm not in the game for this. And then Toto, of course, said he thought it might be a tactical foul, if you're looking at like football analogy. And there's a lot of comments going backwards and forwards between those two. And I feel like those two have properly fallen out.
It reminds me of Damon Hill and Michael Schumacher in the 1994 season. You know, they came together a couple of times. Monza, I think they did. They definitely did at Silverstone. And then in the final race in Australia, obviously, you know, Schumacher basically took Hill out to eventually win the world championship. And it reminds me of that sort of intensity. I noticed that the war of words was going on between Hamilton and Max. You know, Hamilton said he was proud of the stewards for the way they penalised Max Verstappen. I'll come back to that in just a bit. And he also said that he was very surprised that Max Verstappen didn't check he was okay instead of just walking away after the crash. Now, I watched it back, and actually, when Verstappen gets out of the car, he does look over and sees that Hamilton is moving in the cockpit. And I think that was enough of a check in my eyes. You know, I think if he'd have been, you know, unconscious or not moving, I think Max probably would have reacted in a slightly different way. But the war of words is going on. Now, here's the thing, right? So in Silverstone, when they came together earlier in the year, Hamilton was blamed for that and received a 10-second penalty. Max Verstappen's been blamed by the stewards for this race in Monza and the accident that happened, but he's been handed a 3-place grid penalty. Do you think that's fair?
I think it's difficult because I think the Hamilton one, they decided that during the race, didn't they? So they gave him the 10 seconds because it was mid-race, whereas this one was decided post-race. So there was no time. He was out the race, so they couldn't give him a time penalty. You could argue they could add 10 seconds to his time at the next Grand Prix, but that gets complex, doesn't it? So I think it's harsh giving him a 3-grid-place penalty, but at the same time, I can see why they've done it. I can see why they've come to that conclusion. And like you said, they punished Hamilton at one race and they've punished Verstappen here. Different punishments, but I guess that was all they had to go on. Different corners, different incidences. You know, it's just, I think the fact that it was a slow speed corner as such, and it was just a very bizarre accident. The way he ended up on top of the car, and, you know, like you said, there was a lot of things that went on there that you could, almost impossible to recreate that scenario. You know, the car jumping up like it did. But yeah, I feel like it was more of a racing incident than they've punished it for. And I feel like Verstappen, they might be slightly harsh towards him there, but I also understand why they've done it.
You know, no points change at the top of the table then between Hamilton and Verstappen. The grid penalty, though, could be a big issue in Russia in 2 weeks' time, because we know the track in Russia is really favoured by the Mercedes drivers. We also know that probably both Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen are going to have to take engine penalties before the end of the season. The question is, and Christian Horner was asked about this at the weekend, is when do you take that penalty? So Christian Horner said, listen, we've got a brand new engine all ready to go, prepped and ready to go in the car every weekend. It's with us and we can make that decision. So, for instance, I suppose if they had a really bad qualifying in Russia, knowing they had the grid penalty, they might say, right, okay, let's switch the engine, take the penalty, start from the back of the grid. But Horner said, and I would agree with him, they only really want to do that at tracks you can overtake at, because there's no point starting from behind and not be able to make up places. And we saw in Monza, when Bottas started from the rear, he was able to drive the socks off that car and make places up and eventually finish on the podium. So that's what they want to do. Both of those drivers almost certainly going to have new engines before the end of the season. Where do they take that hit? You know, you could argue that Lewis Hamilton might be the best driver to replace his engine at the Russian Grand Prix, because he's going to qualify very high. We know the car suits the circuit. We know you can overtake in Russia. So maybe Hamilton will take that penalty then and give him a great new engine for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And without a doubt, they're going to come together between now and the end of the season. What we don't want is a scenario where we get down to the last race and they take each other out and whoever wins the championship wins it on the fact that they're just ahead before the end of that race. But yeah, there's definitely fireworks to come. Like you say, it's a game of engine changes. When do you do it? There's lots of interesting things coming between now and the end of the season.
Before we wrap up, let's get the stats from Monza, the Italian Grand Prix weekend, from Nicky at Lights Out. You can follow his blogs across the race weekends and in between races as well. Here he is with all the stats and facts on the Italian Grand Prix.
McLaren and Ricciardo end their win droughts. Verstappen and Hamilton record a rare double retirement. And Tsunoda is the first driver to fail to start at Monza in 36 years. Here are the top statistics from the 2021 Italian Grand Prix. McLaren's 3,213-day wait for a victory is over. Daniel Ricciardo won the 2021 Italian Grand Prix, taking the 8th victory of his Formula 1 career and becoming the 20th different driver to win a Grand Prix with McLaren. McLaren recorded their first victory since the 2012 Brazilian Grand Prix when Jenson Button led the field home. This was the 5th longest gap between victories for a team in Formula 1, beaten only by Mercedes, Honda, Renault and Ligier. This was Ricciardo's first win since the 2018 Monaco Grand Prix. He equals Claire Regazzoni as the driver with the 13th longest gap between wins, a gap of 3 years, 3 months and 16 days. Ricciardo is the 39th different driver to win the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, Monza's third new winner in the last 3 years, and the first Australian driver to win the event in its 100-year history. Lando Norris finished a career-best second, recording McLaren's first 1-2 result since the 2010 Canadian Grand Prix. This was the second time that McLaren have scored a 1-2 result at the Italian Grand Prix, having last done so in 2007. McLaren's 1-2 was the first time that a team have finished first and second so far in the 2021 season. This race is the first Australian-British 1-2 since the 2010 British Grand Prix, when Mark Webber was first and Lewis Hamilton was second. The last time the two nations scored a 1-2 result in the opposite order was at the 2017 Singapore Grand Prix, when Hamilton won and Ricciardo was the runner-up. Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton collided at Turn 1 midway through the race, ending both of their afternoons. This was the first time since Verstappen joined the grid in 2015 that both Hamilton and Verstappen have retired from the same Grand Prix. For Hamilton, this was his first retirement since the 2018 Austrian Grand Prix and his first retirement at Monza since 2010. For Verstappen, this was his second consecutive Italian Grand Prix retirement. With Sergio Perez finishing 5th, Red Bull has still yet to score a podium finish at Monza in the V6 hybrid era. And finally, there were 5 retirements from the Italian Grand Prix and 1 non-starter. Yuki Tsunoda was the driver who failed to start, recording the first DNS at the Italian Grand Prix in 36 years. Piercarlo Ganzani was the last driver who failed to start at Monza, with Tolman in 1985. 1 year on from Pierre Gasly's win at Monza, both AlphaTauri drivers failed to finish the 2021 race. The last time both of the Red Bull Junior team's drivers failed to reach the chequered flag at Monza was in 2009, 1 year on from Sebastian Vettel's win with the team.
Nice one, Nicky. You can follow him, of course, across the race weekends at Lights Out, is where you can find him on Twitter with some amazing stats and facts across the weekend, as always. So the next Grand Prix is a week away. We've got to wait a weekend now. This is a weird thing. After 3 in a row, it's like, oh, what are we going to do this weekend? Going to be bored. But we're back next Tuesday with all the sort of preview of the Russian Grand Prix, which is the next one up.
Yep, we'll have all the action coming for you on next week's podcast ahead of that Russian Grand Prix. In the meantime, look after yourselves and thanks for listening.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.